It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama calls immigration plan a common sense middle ground approach. And police arrest 7 in clash at Nigeria's National Assembly. I'm Bill Michaels in Washington. President Barack Obama has announced sweeping changes to U.S. immigration policy, calling the plan a common-sense middle-ground approach that is neither unfair mass amnesty nor impossible mass deportation. The president spelled out his executive action on immigration in a televised address to the American people Thursday night, bypassing Congress and outraging Republicans who say they will try to stop him. Mr. Obama said everyone knows the U.S. immigration system has been broken for decades, and he said those who played by the rules and came to the country legally are offended by those who flout the rules.
If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law.
Mr. Obama said his plan does not apply to anyone who recently came to the U.S. and for those who may try to come here in the future. Police arrested 7 people at Nigeria's National Assembly on Thursday as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from going inside. A police spokesman told VOA that police fired tear gas during a clash between security forces and an estimated 200 supporters of the House Speaker. You can read more of this story at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. A doctor in Mali has died of Ebola after treating an imam who succumbed to the disease, taking the Ebola death toll in the West African country up to 7. The World Health Organization said Ebola virus was almost certainly reintroduced into Mali by a 70-year-old imam from Guinea. The cleric was admitted to a Bamako clinic October 25th and died 2 days later. Health authorities in Mali say they are monitoring 338 people linked to the country's other 6 fatal Ebola cases. Most of them are under daily surveillance. The World Health Organization said Thursday that the 118 people who had direct contact with the 6 Ebola victims have completed their 21-day incubation period without developing symptoms. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry flew to Vienna Thursday to join talks on Iran's nuclear program just 4 days before the deadline. VOA's Al Pessin has the story from Vienna.
Secretary Kerry and other Western officials say Iran must still make the strategic decision to accept limits on its nuclear program, a move that would contradict the so-called red lines set by Iran's supreme leader earlier this year. On Thursday, the Reuters news agency quoted an unnamed U.S. official as saying the negotiators are talking about another extension until March of next year. But earlier Thursday in Paris, Secretary Kerry said the opposite.
We're not talking about an extension, not among ourselves. We have not talked about the ingredients of an extension or extension. We're talking about getting an agreement.
Still, Kerry said he would be willing to look at the possibility of an extension if the talks go to the final hour. Al Pessin, VOA News, Vienna.
U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is in Ukraine for talks with the country's leadership on the possibility of fresh assistance to the Kiev government as it battles a pro-Russian insurgency near the Russian border. Biden today meets with President Petro Poroshenko and Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk as controversy swirls over renewed calls for Washington to supply lethal aid to the Ukrainian military. Details of Biden's mission have not been disclosed, but on Wednesday, President Obama's nominee to fill the number 2 post at the State Department said the White House should consider providing Ukraine with lethal defensive military equipment. Tony Blinken told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that arming Ukraine's military could force Russia to rethink its role in supporting the rebellion. And the U.S. job and housing markets are healing. U.S. inflation is modest, and the overall economy is poised to grow more strongly in the next few months, next year, and in 2016. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, and this is VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, November 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria police fired tear gas at lawmakers in parliament.
The members who were with the speaker became agitated, and some of them got angry and forced their way into the assembly complex. There and then, the police now brought in reinforcements and locked the door again after the speaker had passed.
Imam is the spokesman for the Speaker of Nigeria's House of Representatives. A Nigerian lawmaker says the police action is an assault on democracy and the rule of law. Thieves in Guinea have stolen a vehicle carrying the blood of Ebola patients. And here in the United States, President Barack Obama bypasses Congress and announces his immigration reform plan.
There are actions I have the legal authority to take as president. The same kinds of actions taken by Democratic and Republican presidents before me that will help make our immigration system more fair and more just.
U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the nation on Thursday night. A South Sudan opposition leader comments on transitional power sharing differences and pressure mounts in Kenya to lift a ban on genetically modified food. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Police in Nigeria fired tear gas on Thursday in an effort to prevent a top opposition lawmaker from entering parliament. Members of parliament had convened in the capital, Abuja, to debate President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend the state of emergency in the country's northeast as part of the fight against Boko Haram militants. Chris Stein reports from the capital.
The standoff began when Speaker of the House Aminu Tambuwal approached a gate leading into the National Assembly building. Imam, a spokesman for Tambuwal, said police blocked the speaker from entering the complex without giving a reason other than they were following orders. Tambuwal recently defected from the ruling People's Democratic Party to the All Progressives Congress Opposition Party.
The members who were with the speaker became agitated and some of them got angry and forced their way into the assembly complex. There and then, the police now brought in reinforcements and locked the door again after the speaker had passed. So some of them had to climb over the fence. As soon as they had access into the premises, the police now used tear gas to disperse the members.
Police spokesman Emmanuel Ajukwu said the lawmakers and their entourage were unruly, and police acted to restore order. He says seven people were arrested.
They broke the cordon put by the police because we had intelligence and there will be trouble today, so we had to cordon the area to avoid a breakdown of law and order.
Lawmakers from Nigeria's Senate and House of Representatives were expected to vote today on whether to act on President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend a state of emergency in three northeastern states. Lawmakers first approved emergency rule last year in response to the spreading Boko Haram insurgency, which has left thousands of people dead. Imam says the police's refusal to allow Tambuwal to enter came as a surprise.
You requested for the extension. He came to honor that, to do his job, and possibly sit down and look into the request. And yet you are asking armed men, armed police, and state security personnel to stop him from having access to the house. It's really baffling, honestly. It's something we cannot put together.
Imam says the speaker eventually made it into the National Assembly. Tambuwal then met with senators and held a closed-door session with fellow members of the House, who decided that the president could use his mandate to continue the fight against Boko Haram in the north until lawmakers decide on the emergency rule extension. The House then adjourned to December 3rd. The Senate, meanwhile, adjourned till next Tuesday. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
A leading Nigerian lawmaker says the House Committee on Police Affairs has called the Inspector General of Police to appear before the group today, Friday, to explain why security officers fired tear gas at legislators yesterday. Haruna Mukhtar Bitara, chairman of the House Committee on the Army, called the incident an assault on democracy and the rule of law. He tells reporter Peter Clotty that lawmakers from both the ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and the main opposition All Progressives Congress, the APC, had found fault with the decision to use tear gas.
Yeah, really, I was surprised when I saw the police this morning in the National Assembly. We've been sent text messages from our speaker, including the deputy speaker of the House, that we should come and deliberate on this emergency extension. As soon as we reached the House this morning, we saw over 500 policemen and SS and the state security services personnel. They locked the gate that we cannot enter, the speaker cannot enter. We have to force ourselves to enter the the premises of the National Assembly today.
Some of your colleagues are saying this is an assault on the legislative arm of government. What do you say to that?
Really, to me, it's a surprise thing. We are legislators. Legislators are there to represent people. We've been elected. We've not just gone to National Assembly to stay. The thing we are supposed to take up today is an emergency issue to discuss what is happening to us within Northeastern. I'll be surprised today if I woke up in the morning, something I've been invited to come and sit on, somebody is denying us from entry. I don't know what really happened. They tear gas everybody within the assembly. We have to close the house, both state and the state house of representatives, National House of Representatives. It's sad for our country, I'm telling you. Very, very sad. This is democracy we're enjoying. It seriously is an assault to the democracy of this country. I am telling you. There's nobody, both senators and National Assembly today, nobody will tell you he's happy. Nobody. Nobody. And the government, I don't know the kind of speaker they think they have. The speaker controls the house today. If not because of the speaker, I'd be surprised what is going to happen within the house today.
How are your fellow colleagues reacting to this? What is the next line of action about this?
This is what we've not decided yet. When we resumed, I think it will follow. You will see what is going to happen within us as legislators. But now we keep everything calm. Till we resumed on the 3rd of December.
Did you speak with the speaker following this incident?
Yeah, as soon as we close from the chamber, we want to see him to discuss issues of next agenda. What are we going to do when we resumed? We have to sit down with him and discuss these issues with him, since he's our speaker.
So have you gotten any reaction from the police following this incident in the House of Reps?
No. We're not even interested.
Haruna Mukhtar Bitara is the chairman of Nigeria's House Committee on the Army. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Abuja. Thieves in Guinea have stolen a cooler containing the blood samples of suspected Ebola patients. The robbers took the samples after attacking a vehicle on a remote highway yesterday, Thursday. Health officials are urging the robbers not to open the cooler and to return it immediately. Karim Kamara reports for VOA from Conakry.
The four-wheel drive vehicle was traveling from Kankan in Upper Guinea to an Ebola treatment center in Gigedu in the southeast when it was attacked by well-armed robbers. The thieves intimidated people on board the vehicle and stole a number of items, including cash and box containing the blood samples. Dr. Mumia Bari, who heads a Guinean committee coordinating the fight against Ebola, says the samples were due to be tested for the deadly virus. He said armed robbers effectively attacked a vehicle on which there were blood samples of suspected Ebola patient due to be processed at a laboratory in Gigedu. He says it is after the laboratory test that we will know whether the blood contains the Ebola virus or not. This is the first time such an incident has been reported since the Ebola outbreak began in Guinea in December last year. Guinea is still struggling to contain the spread of Ebola and to trace people who came in contact with those infected by the virus. Mumia warned the thieves against touching the blood samples and called them to immediately return the cooler. He says the blood is already dangerous, and if they manipulate it, will be extremely dangerous to them and to their communities. He says measures have been taken by the coordinating committee in the fight against Ebola to reinforce the security of their vehicles carrying blood samples. He says now they have put in place a strong security measures, and this will be reinforced in the days to come. Guinea's government has announced an intensive manhunt for the thieves and warned anybody caught with a stolen cooler will face the full force of the law. Gendarmes on motorbikes have begun patrolling the highway looking for the robbers. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, November 21st, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's opposition leader, Lam Akol, says the president and prime minister in a transitional government must share executive powers in order to restore peace and prepare the country for multi-party politics after the transition. And government. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Lam Akol Ajawin, who heads the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Democratic Change, or SPLMDC, says if President Salva Kiir is to be taken at his word when he says he wants peace, a power-sharing government should not be a contentious matter.
Our view is that concentrating power in one hand is one of the reasons of this crisis, and therefore the power must be shared between a president and a prime minister.
Mediators at the peace talks in Ethiopia have said the two sides have agreed on the general scope of presidential powers and a new position of prime minister and on joint responsibilities between the president and prime minister, although those specific responsibilities have yet to be spelled out. Former Vice President Riek Machar, who presumably would be named prime minister in the transitional government, has proposed that the president can only appoint ministers in consultation with the prime minister. In addition, the prime minister would command rebel forces until the two armies are reintegrated, and the president and prime minister would jointly appoint state governors. But the government has not yet agreed to those conditions. Last week, Information Minister Michael Makuei-Lueth said the prime minister should mainly help devise and implement policy. Akol says that kind of government will not work.
What we are saying is you need a meaningful and genuine power sharing. We don't want names without titles. We are talking about real sharing of power, a real definition of powers. It's not a question of copying from another country, no.
Akol says there are countries where power is shared equally between the president and the prime minister.
If you take the example of France, you have an executive president and executive prime minister. Exactly what we want in South Sudan. You have the president who is the head of state, and the prime minister is head of government. And you define the powers accordingly. We have the case of Rwanda in their constitution of 2010. You have a president who we cannot say is just a figurehead. He's an executive president. But he has also a prime minister who chairs the meetings of the council of ministers, who makes appointments.
But a strong president and a strong prime minister don't always work. During the Grand Coalition government formed in neighboring Kenya after the disputed 2007 elections, President Mwai Kibaki shared power with Prime Minister Raila Odinga, but the two often clashed over policy decisions. Some observers fear the same thing could happen in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
President Barack Obama has announced sweeping changes to U.S. immigration policy, calling the plan a common-sense middle-ground approach that is neither unfair mass amnesty nor impossible mass deportation. The president spelled out his executive action on immigration in a televised address to the American people on Thursday night, bypassing Congress.
There are actions I have the legal authority to take as president. The same kinds of actions taken by Democratic and Republican presidents before me that will help make our immigration system more fair and more just. Tonight, I'm announcing those actions. First, we'll build on our progress at the border with additional resources for our law enforcement personnel so that they can stem the flow of illegal crossings and speed the return of those who do cross over. Second, I'll make it easier and faster for high-skilled immigrants, graduates and entrepreneurs to stay and contribute to our economy, as so many business leaders have proposed. Third, we'll take steps to deal responsibly with the millions of undocumented immigrants who already live in our country.
Mr. Obama said the policy he announced applies to those immigrants who are not criminals and who are willing to pay taxes.
We expect people who live in this country to play by the rules. We expect that those who cut the line will not be unfairly rewarded. So we're going to offer the following deal. If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law. That's what this deal is.
The action has outraged Republicans in Congress who say they will try to stop the president, but Mr. Obama challenged them to pass an immigration bill.
The actions I'm taking are not only lawful, they're the kinds of actions taken by every single Republican president and every single Democratic president for the past half century. And to those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill. I want to work with both parties to pass a more permanent legislative solution. And the day I sign that bill into law, the actions I take will no longer be necessary.
President Obama reminded those who criticized the policy that Americans are all immigrants who once came from somewhere else.
Scripture tells us that we shall not oppress a stranger. My fellow Americans, we are and always will be a nation of immigrants. We were strangers once too. And whether our forebears were strangers who crossed the Atlantic or the Pacific or the Rio Grande, we are here only because this country welcomed them in and taught them that to be an American is about something more than what we look like or what our last names are or how we worship. What makes us Americans is our shared commitment to an ideal that all of us are created equal and all of us have the chance to make of our lives what we will.
U.S. President Barack Obama speaking Thursday night in a televised speech to the American people. With the virus threatening the crops of up to 70% of Kenya's maize farmers, a number of lawmakers are calling for the country's controversial ban on GMOs, the genetically modified organisms, to be lifted for the sake of food security. Hillary Hewler has more for VOA from Nairobi.
If there's one thing you're almost guaranteed to find in a Kenyan kitchen, it's corn, known locally as maize. Corn is roasted by the side of the road, boiled with beans, or ground into a flour to make ugali, a Kenyan staple. Agricultural researcher Simon Gichuki explains that for many Kenyans, maize is an irreplaceable part of their diet.
They eat maize almost every day. There are people who eat it lunch, they also eat it for dinner and at breakfast. So when there is no maize in Kenya, we usually say there is famine. Even when the other crops are doing well, like bananas, cassava, sweet potatoes, we say there is famine.
This is why the past several years have been so alarming for Kenyans. The country's cereal-growing heartlands have been ravaged by a virus called maize lethal necrosis disease. The Cereal Growers Association has said the disease could cut production this year by almost a third, with up to 70% of maize farmers affected. According to Kipkorir Menjo, head of the Kenya Farmers Association, the virus could be a threat to food security. In Kenya, more and more policymakers are starting to think that the solution to diseases like this is genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. GMOs have been banned in Kenya since 2012, when a study found that GMO maize caused cancer in rats. The study was later discredited and pulled from the scientific journal that had published it. But in Kenya, GMOs are still illegal. Gichuki, who runs the biotechnology unit at the Kenya Agricultural and Livestock Research Organization, says Kenyan scientists are already talking to foreign universities to start work on a lethal necrosis disease-resistant maize. Several other types of GMO maize have been harvested already, including one crop in October. Menjo says that among farmers themselves, opinions on GMOs are mixed. But a number of lawmakers have been speaking out in favor of lifting the ban.
The pressure is from the MPs because they know the benefits and why these kind of GMOs are necessary as far as food security is concerned. Because every now and then we have been having challenges of having enough food to feed the nation.
GMOs are still controversial in Kenya, and although Menjo supports legalizing them, he says many people are concerned about their potential side effects.
You find that the unintended results is what most people fear, because who is controlling to ensure that we have the positive results coming in and not the negative side of it? That is basically what makes people to be a bit skeptical.
But Gichuki is convinced it won't be long before he and his team of scientists will be able to distribute their newly created GMO seeds to farmers.
The government is very serious with food security, so I don't see any reason why this ban is going to be there for long. It will definitely be lifted. And we in research are not just waiting, we are moving on, preparing, because we are confident that it will be lifted.
Kenya's GMO ban can only be lifted by the cabinet, which has yet to make a decision. Hillary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Global Watch Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa. Alarmed by the growing racism in sports, especially in European football, the Global Watch Summit is working on concrete measures to battle against this scourge. Former South African President Thabo Mbeki outlined the basic thrust of what the two-day summit, which started on Thursday, is working on.
I'd also like to congratulate Mandela Foundation, the Doha Goals Foundation, and the Sawale Foundation for taking the bold initiative to form Global Watch with the slogan, Say No to Racism, focusing on the area of sport. And bearing in mind the seriousness of this matter, I'm certain that all of us will support the proposal to adopt a draft global charter, which will be, as stated, a roadmap based on a basic set of principles to address racism and discrimination in sport. And similarly, I'd like to believe that we'll also support the convening of the national summits, both to finalize the charter and adopt the visualized national codes of conduct, which again is stated, would govern the conduct and behavior of each country's sportspersons vis-a-vis racism and discrimination.
That was Thabo Mbeki, former South African president, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. Meanwhile, FIFA president Sepp Blatter says they have taken steps towards addressing the rising tide of racism in football. He explains.
It acknowledges FIFA's commitment to use football as a tool to confront ignorance with knowledge, bigotry with tolerance, and egoism with generosity. Football is for all. At FIFA, we showed zero tolerance towards racism and all other forms of discrimination in football. At FIFA, we say it out loud and clear. Racism has no place in our game, and it will be punished to the fullest extent possible. The 63rd FIFA Congress approved a far-reaching resolution against racism and discrimination, and FIFA is bringing it to life as shown by the decisions taken by the FIFA Disciplinary Committee in recent cases. It is now up to the confederations and member associations to follow FIFA's lead.
That was Sepp Blatter, FIFA president, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A doctor in Mali has died of Ebola after treating an imam who succumbed to the disease, taking the Ebola death toll in the West African country up to 7. The World Health Organization said the Ebola virus was almost certainly reintroduced into Mali by a 70-year-old imam from Guinea. The cleric was admitted to a Bamako clinic on October 25th and died 2 days later. Police arrested 7 people at Nigeria's National Assembly on Thursday as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from going inside. A police spokesman told VOA that police fired tear gas during a clash between security forces and an estimated 200 supporters of House Speaker Aminu Tambuwa. An Egyptian court has acquitted a male doctor charged with performing female genital mutilation that killed a teenage girl in the country's first ever FGM trial. The court also acquitted the girl's father, who took her to the doctor for surgery last year in the Nile Delta town. That's it for this Friday, November 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everybody a very good weekend.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.